Daily. Reading. Episode 836 for July 30, 2026. Sir Otter mentions he may be on vacation tomorrow, so this might be your last one for a while. But he promises to keep the queue moving and maybe drop a bonus weekend edition if he gets through it. Let's kick off with a piece that got a lot of attention this week. Laurie Voss on O'Reilly took a step back and asked the question, "Nobody seems to be answering anymore. What actually is a loop?" The word is everywhere. Adi Osmani wrote about loop engineering. Swix published Loopcraft. LandChain published the same thing with a slightly different title, the AI Engineer World's Fair. Main Stage talked about loops for days, and then the conference closed with an hour-long debate about whether all the hype has outrun the actual practice. And through all of it, Voss noticed that nobody was being precise about which loop they meant. So he mapped it out and found at least four distinct architectures hiding behind that one word. The first is the execution loop, the agent's own act-observe cycle. Call a tool, read the result, decide the next action, repeat. This is the innermost loop and the one most people picture when they say the word. Addy calls this the inner execution loop, and it's the part agents can now mostly run on their own. It iterates on steps within a single task and ends on environment feedback, like test output or file contents. The second is the task loop, what Jeffrey Huntley calls the Routh loop. You restart a coding agent against the same specification over and over, allocating a completely fresh context window each time and doing exactly one task per loop. The apparent waste is the point. Refeeding the full spec each time prevents the context rot that quietly degrades long-running sessions. What ends the loop is spec compliance and passing tests. The human writes the spec and judges doneness. The third is the product loop, the software factory, and this was the loudest version at the AI Engineer World's Fair. Teresa Tiskova from Factory defined it as the whole loop, the whole life cycle of developing software with autonomy. In an interview with Latent Space, Zach Lloyd of Warp got specific about what that life cycle is. Triage, specification, implementation, review, verification, shipping, and monitoring. Warp is dogfooding this with its own open-sourced repo under the control of Oz, its factory platform. And the most striking data point, Anthropic says 65% of its own product team's code is now created by its internal version of Claude Tag. Not help me write this. Take responsibility for this part of the code base, monitor this feedback channel, pick up tasks on your own. The fourth is the system loop, what Roland Gavrilescu of Introspection calls auto-research. The inner loop is the primary system doing user-facing work, and the outer loop studies and maintains the primary system. It iterates on prompts, harnesses, model choices, and the evils themselves. Roland's one-liner is that the loop is the product. The minimal existence proof is Andre Karpathy's auto-research from March, roughly 630 lines of Python that ran 50 hypotheses. Edit, evaluate experiments overnight on one GPU. The shipped case is Meta's Brain2Qwerty V2, where agents iteratively modified the codebase to invent better decoding architectures and produced a substantial improvement in word error rate. Voss adds a fifth ring at the top that nobody has named yet, the oversight loop. It sets goals, allocates budgets, and culls work, and it's the one ring where a human should live. The sharpest disagreements at the conference were all, once you translated them, arguments about who runs that top ring. Zach Lloyd and Roland make the case for turning the dial up, pick your checkpoints deliberately, ratchet autonomy as trust accumulates. The other camp says the dial has a stop. Jeffrey Litt of Notion called factories a depressing vision and argued that those who delegate understanding get replaced by the agent. Paul Bocaus put it flatly, there is no auto, and there will be no auto. His argument isn't only about quality, it's about ownership. People need purpose. The honest data point, K, came from inside Anthropic itself, even the team running Claude Tag reports being bottlenecked on reviews and on the human ability to conceptualize what the system is doing. The checkpoint humans kept for themselves is now the constraint. That sets up a piece from the DX newsletter on measuring the impact of AI coding tools. Someone proposed a metric called developer horsepower, defined as useful work per day, calculated by multiplying AI-assisted pull requests by an estimated human effort each would have required. DX's argument is that this starts one step too early. The better question isn't how much human work the AI replaced. It's whether AI has increased the organization's capacity to deliver innovation and whether that additional capacity is sustainable. That framing leads to a different measurement strategy built in layers. Throughput is more total work happening at the system level. This is a valid signal at scale, even if it breaks down as a measure of individual developers. Deployments. Does the work survive to shipped software? DX cites research showing that AI raises commit volume by up to 180%, yet the effect on actual releases attenuates to roughly 20 to 30%. The upstream speedup runs into human bottlenecks downstream in review, integration, and release. Innovation. Time ratio. Are the savings being reinvested in higher value work? This is the step where AI actually creates organizational value, and it's the one most teams skip. Quality as a guardrail, if throughput climbs while failure rates climb with it, you haven't gained capacity. You've moved the cost somewhere less visible. And satisfaction. Gains bought by burning out your engineers aren't gains you get to keep. DX's core argument is that developer horsepower tries to collapse a multidimensional question into one figure, and engineering productivity can't be captured by a single metric. The useful question is whether your engineering system has more capacity to deliver innovation and whether that capacity is sustainable. From Gusto, a post on making design systems legible to AI. The problem is straightforward. AI models were trained on the public internet, millions of material UI buttons and thousands of chakra and tailwind buttons. They've seen zero buttons from Gusto's private design system, so when an engineer asks for a button, the model writes the average, which looks exactly like every public design system and nothing like theirs. The fix Gusto proposes is eval-driven design systems. It treats schemas as something stronger than TypeScript types. Each component in the design system gets a ZOD schema with a .meta payload carrying examples, content guidelines, accessibility guidelines, import statements, and Figma links. The import statement alone killed an entire category of hallucinations because models love inventing import paths that don't exist. And they pair that publication with a prompt telling the model to copy from .meta.examples rather than inventing props. The next step is scoring every prop using evals and turning these schemas into a full eval-driven system. From Depo, a post arguing that GitHub is the wrong shape for this new world. The argument is that we live in a fundamentally different world for software development, and the tools we use haven't caught up. A lot of attention is given to GitHub's performance and reliability, but the more interesting thing to question is the paradigm itself. The author grew up with GitHub, wanted to work there as an engineer, and still has the muscle memory. But when LLMs first came online, it was natural to bolt them onto the existing paradigm. Agents could write code in a branch, open a pull request, get a review, and eventually merge. It was logical because the systems existed and agents still moved at human speed. Then things changed. Agents with the latest models got good. What followed was more code, more branches, more parallel work, and more strain on the existing human-powered paradigm. The collaboration pattern and the underlying systems are now the primary bottleneck. The argument isn't that you should abandon GitHub or that it's unreliable. It's that software delivery needs to be thought of as infrastructure rather than collaboration. Source control, execution, artifacts, caching, identity, and policy as composable infrastructure primitives. The winners of the next decade won't build a better pull request. They'll build the infrastructure that makes software generation, validation, and deployment operate at machine scale. From Wiz, a disclosure of Cosmos Escape, a critical vulnerability in Azure Cosmos DB's Gremlin API that could have been exploited to compromise every database in the service, including Microsoft's own internal. Databases, the ones powering Microsoft Intra ID, Teams, and Copilot. The attack worked because Cosmos DB's Gremlin engine translated queries into .NET code, but didn't sufficiently account for .NET reflection. That allowed file read, write, and ultimately arbitrary code execution through queries against a customer's own database. From there, the researchers found a signing key on the cluster that wasn't scoped to a single account. It worked across tenants, regions, and API flavors, SQL, MongoDB, Cassandra, and Gremlin. It could retrieve the primary key for any Cosmos DB account on the service, all through publicly accessible endpoints. They called it the Cosmos Master Key. It also unlocked the Config Store, a regional registry of every Cosmos DB account, including account names, subscription IDs, tenant IDs, and network settings. The attack chain was enumeration through the Config Store, retrieval of the target's primary key via the Master Key, and full read-write access to all their databases. Microsoft remediated this fully, deploying a hot fix within 48 hours and completing a major architectural migration across all regions in July. No customer action was required, and Microsoft found no evidence of exploitation outside the researchers' testing. The broader lesson from Wiz is that multi-tenant cloud services need at least one strong isolation boundary around tenant-controlled execution, one that exposes only a small, heavily audited attack surface. Everything inside that boundary should be treated as tenant-controlled and untrusted. And from Martin Fowler, a piece called The Orchestrator's Tax. He was deep in a Claude Code session when four sub-agents were running against a refactor and the session started to feel harder to reason about than the code itself. He stopped the coding work and asked the orchestrator to critique its own delegation decision. What he found was not what he expected. His first instinct was that the largest cost must be the duplicated effort of running four sub-agents, each reading files and reconstructing context independently. But the largest surprise turned up elsewhere. At one point during the session, the orchestrator suggested checking on the running agents and used a tool that pulled back the full raw transcript of a background agent, tens of thousands of tokens of JSON-L. And intermediate reasoning, imported wholesale into the main thread. It happened twice. Those transcript dumps stayed in the orchestrator's context after the tool call completed, and every turn after carried them forward whether or not they were still useful. That was the key realization. Tokens are spent once. Context shapes every decision that follows. The orchestrator is the only part of the system that accumulates understanding across a long session. It remembers why a design decision was made, carries forward architectural constraints, and knows which trade-offs have already been discussed. The sub-agents don't, and that's by design. They're supposed to be disposable. The real benefit of sub-agents is that they keep noisy intermediate reasoning out of the main thread and return only what it still needs. That's the isolation sub-agents are supposed to provide, and it only holds if the main thread respects it. Fowler's working belief now is that this is what sub-agents are actually for. Not that they save time, but that they let you offload reasoning. The orchestrator doesn't need to hold on to. He encoded that into his standing instruction file, CLAUD, with rules like prefer 2 to 4 agents in one wave and do not pull background agents for status when the answer can be given from what is already known. The question he carries into every multi-agent design now is not how many agents to run, but what earns a place in the orchestrator's context. And the one he hasn't answered yet is how to measure this properly instead of relying on the orchestrator's own account of its mistakes. A dense episode here. A few threads connect across the pieces worth noting. There's a consistent conversation about where humans belong as systems get more capable. Voss mapped it as the oversight loop. DX framed it as the sustainable capacity question. Fowler called it the orchestrator's working memory. All roads lead to the same tension. The more we delegate, the more the remaining human work becomes the actual bottleneck. Serrateur will be on vacation tomorrow, so no reading list unless a bonus weekend edition materializes. Either way, the queue is long and the filtering continues.